started. My name is Pastor Dennis Russell, and I'm super grateful to be here with you to talk a little bit about human trafficking today. The things that I'm going to share with you, they will apply to both labor and sex trafficking. I think there was a question about that. I did want to make mention that I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time defining what human trafficking is, because I wanted to focus on giving you tangible steps on how you as the local church can address human trafficking. If you are like, I don't even know what it is, then let's get together afterwards and I can kind of break it down for you exactly what it is, how it happens. I will talk a little bit about grooming and about how people are recruited into it, but I'm not gonna spend a lot of time on the definition except to help you understand the vulnerabilities that people have in our churches that are being preyed upon in order to, have it happen in the first place. So a little bit first about my story. So I am, I've been an ordained pastor for about 4 or 5 years. I am married to Pastor Timothy Russell, who's down the way doing an entrepreneurship class. And together we pastor a couple of churches in Northern California. He's also associate supervisor for Foursquare in the Western District. I also I am a cybersecurity professor, and you'll understand why I'm telling you that a little bit later. I also am mother of 7, grandmother of 5, blended family. I know I look wonderful, but I don't look that good because I'm a neighbor for 2 of those things. But anyway, just so you understand, full life, and I'm talking to you, full life, lots going on. But I want to say, I want to make sure you understand, if God sends you to do it, he's going to equip you for it. So he's going to give you the strength, he's going to give you the insight, the wisdom, and you can make up all the excuses like I tried to. I got kids, Lord. You know, I got kids. Yeah, I got grandkids. I got a job. I got a husband. And he's like, no, you got this. So I want you to know that if he's calling you to do something, stretching you, he will equip you to do it. Okay. A little bit also about my background. I am a survivor of all kinds of stuff. I was in foster care as a child. I've survived sexual abuse, poverty, all kinds of things, domestic violence. I didn't grow up in church, and so came to the Lord almost at the age of 30. And I just mentioned that to say some of the things that we're talking about, I understand, firsthand. And I'm happy again to talk about that. And I will be giving you, I'm going to geek out on you a little bit. And what we're going to be talking about is how to create a strategy for your church that will help you to meet people where they are. And hopefully before human trafficking happens. So that's a little bit of my story. But last thing I'll share is that I co-lead the Anti-Trafficking Cause Network. And so on your chair, you would have seen this. And I invite you to please take that, scan in the QR code, register for the Cause Network, join us next month. It's every second or every fourth Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time. We meet. And there's a bunch of other causes that you can also get involved in. So I co-lead that with Karen Baldwin, who I'll come over to here, and she can introduce herself.
Well, thanks, Vanessa. I'm super excited to be here again about all the tools that you have and the resources from U.S. Anti-Trafficking Work is so valuable. I work with Compassion First, and so I used to live in Indonesia. Now I take trips back and forth, but we're really also connected in with like the global anti-trafficking network too. And so I know today's kind of primarily focused on the U.S., but if you all have questions about the international resources that are available, I'm happy to help with that. There's the Faith Alliance Against Slavery and Trafficking, which is like a coalition of different faith-based orgs that we're a part of that have, reached into that area. There's the European Freedom Network and
the Asia Regional Anti-Trafficking Network as well. So just a side note for that, but really glad that you guys are here. Every step is important and there's so much to learn. I'm always learning. We never arrive, you know, there's always something else to do, and it's really important that we work together because no one person can do this alone. And so we all have an important role to play, and Vanessa's going to talk about that a little bit later. I just wanted to put the flag that every piece is important, even just praying about it, even getting informed, getting more education, like all of it is really important. So thanks.
Yay. Thanks, Karen.
We've been working together to create this causes network, which is really cool. We had about 10 people on last call, and some people are ministering to Native people in a reservation in Montana. Some people are working with people in other countries. One person's doing like a facilitator for Pure Desire. One of the guys that joined the call, and he's really trying to take on pornography. I think he was in South Dakota, or was it? Yeah. Or maybe it was Nebraska, but anyway, he was different people bringing their expression to address human trafficking. And so we just want to encourage you again, wherever you are. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about that.
All right. So, we got to make sure we introduce Janie. So Janie is also our co-lead. And Janie is, she runs a nonprofit called Shelter and Rain out of Kansas City. And she and her husband are amazing. They could not be here today, but they also, so the three of us co-lead that. The Causes Network. So let me start off with the scripture here. I love this scripture because it just works the way I think, which is, it starts off, you know, what can I bring to the Lord? Should we bring a burnt offering? Should we bow down before God Most High with offerings of yearling calves? All the stuff we do. You know, any of you, Martha, anybody got that, Martha? What would I need to do, Lord? Should we offer him thousands of rams and 10,000 rivers of olive oil? Sacrifice our firstborn? Anybody want to do that? My son's like, hey, what are you doing? But no, the Lord says, I've told you what is good. Do what is right. Love mercy. Walk humbly with your God. And so what I love about this is it's a hard message and it's an easy message. It's hard because if you're anything like me, you want a cookbook. Give me the recipe. Give me the 1, 2, 3. This is what we're going to do to address human trafficking. And I'm sorry to tell you, it's just not that simple because we're dealing with people. And we're dealing with evil. And every time you think you have it figured out, here comes the enemy rearranging and coming in another way. So the thing that I have learned is I've got to just keep going back to doing what is right, to having mercy, and to walking humbly with God, which means submitting myself and saying, I don't know what to do here. Just yesterday, I had some youth. So we have 7 houses, 3 houses for men and their families, and 3 houses for women and their families, and 1 house for girls ages 13 and 17. And just yesterday, I had 2 girls run away from our home. And I was literally like with my daughter, who's their same age, and we were trying to enjoy ourselves. And I got the text saying, so-and-so ran away. And I was finally starting to have dinner. And I just began to say, Lord, please. That's all I could say. That was my prayer. Please, Jesus, please. I can start crying now because I was just like, I didn't know what else to say. What could be happening to them right now? And 2 hours later, they came back home. And so it's this humility that we have to walk in knowing that we don't have all the answers. We're never going to have all the answers. He is the answer. He's going to order our footsteps, and he's going to show us how to be relevant in every situation. So let me ask you this question. Do you think that human trafficking is happening in your church? Anyone? Show of hands? Yes? Yeah? Maybe? Okay. So let me talk to you about some things that you might consider.
as you're thinking about your church, as you're thinking about your neighborhood?
So, very prevalent in the U.S., 100 to 300,000 victims in the U.S., according to the DOJ. 25 million, according to the International Labor Organization. And if you incorporate labor trafficking, that'll go up to 40. Okay. And then the force, U.S. industry, Forbes says it's a $150 billion U.S. industry, which is more money than Apple, Microsoft, Cisco, Google all put together. So this is a money maker. In fact, the U.S. is the largest consumer of sex and of porn in the globe. So big problem that we have here. And so you might be saying, so is this really happening? Well, do you have foster care in your church? Yep. You have homelessness? Any single parents? Lack of supervision, of children? Maybe they're being led by elderly grandparents? Poverty? People who identify as Black, Indigenous, or people of color, BIPOC? People who have experienced abuse. If you have any of that in your community, the chances are very high that you have someone who's experienced human trafficking or at minimum abuse that can be preyed upon for human trafficking as a point of grooming. A few things on that. 65 to 95% of those who were trafficked were abused as children. 88% of those who were exposed to abuse, of traffickers were exposed to abuse as children. So that means people who are doing the pimping oftentimes are coming from households where abuse is happening. So, and one of the things that I'm really adamant about is when we see, young men and we go, oh, they're pimps, oh, they're so terrible. But we have to think back to the time when their mom was getting beaten up and we didn't intervene and they were watching their mom being beaten up. And what that does to a young man is it creates a fury and rage in them and it causes them to sear their heart in order to function. And once the heart is seared, it's easy to hurt people like that. So it's just something for us to think about. How can we be preventative in the church? How can we notice when there's abuse and intervene? Red flags, maybe you have this in youth, in your youth group, people who are experiencing child pregnancy, or now they're coming up with tattoos, or they're highly sexualized, or they have signs of abuse, substance abuse, mental health. Anyone seeing any of that kind of stuff? Those would all be risks, high risk for trafficking. And so, these are hopefully what this is saying to all of us is, yes, it's in my church, right? And so now what do I do about it? Well, first thing I want to invite you to do, and this sounds so cliche, right, church? Pray, right? But I want to confess something to you. When I first started Love Never Fails 12 years ago, prayer was the last thing on my list. Because I got that Martha thing going. I had all of my lists of things to do. We got to get done. We got action. We got to get out in the street and go talk to people. But what I realized is, no, we need to pray. And the prayer will inform where to go. The prayer will inform what to do. In fact, many times in my time of prayer, the Lord has told me, kind of like what Jesus did with Lazarus, wouldn't even let me go. And people are like, you're supposed to be here. You're supposed to be here. Well, the Lord didn't tell me to come. So I'm not coming yet. And it's because it's not about me. It's about what he wants to do. There might be somebody else that he wants to step up. And if I keep coming, that person won't come. So these are things that I want to share with you because through their prayer life, you're going to be able to get the vision for what God wants to do in your unique life. And this is so important. I also want to mention that prayer is a huge part of outreach. When we go out and do street outreach, which I'll talk about a little bit more later, people never, hardly ever turn down prayer. And I have offered, my husband and my kids get so tired of me because I'll be in a mood. I feel like praying for people. And I'll just start walking and I'm like, ooh, he needs prayer. Oh, she needs prayer. Just yesterday, we were out and somebody, I saw somebody and the Lord told me to give him a word. And it was a very brief word. And he said, only give him that. And I did, and they just began to cry. And it's just making yourself available for that. I remember one time that this guy was all with a nice outfit. He was eating McDonald's. And he doesn't need prayer. He has McDonald's. And I saw him. I was walking by him, and the Holy Spirit was like, "Here, go ask him if he wants prayer." And I went over to him. And he just started crying. Gave his life to the Lord. He did not look like he needed any help. So I want to invite you, please, be sensitive. If the Holy Spirit is leading you to do that, go ahead and do it and see how great it's going to be. So the other thing is we want to do is make sure that we're getting educated. And so I want to share a couple of resources here with you, but I'm happy to send out, so I think we got you all checked in, so I'm going to be sending out an email with all a bunch of resources that might be helpful to you. Jane wrote this book called Courageous and Free. And it's a journey to inner healing. And it's a group that meets to do a deeper level of healing together. And she's running this out of Kansas. But you can purchase the book on Amazon and run your own groups. That could be a way that you could provide some healing to someone who's been abused so that they can prevent being preyed upon by someone because they're suffering in silence. Similarly, and I'll send this around, I wrote a book called Fight for Love. And I have a few copies here, but I'll send around a little sample of it just so you can take a look at it. And this book is a 12-step recovery group book written, modeled after Celebrate Recovery, but it's for survivors of abuse, human trafficking, and domestic violence. So it has testimonies from people who have those kinds of experiences. And so that's another thing you could do. So these are group ideas. Then you have things like what Dr. Mashovsky, I would say wrong. Him and his wife, they're wonderful. They do psychoeducation, and they're part of Compassion First. And they help us understand the physiology of the brain. And the reason why that's so important is when you start to understand that you have neural pathways. Did you know that you think 67,000 thoughts every day? And 85% of them are negative. And 90% of your thoughts, you repeat them every day. And so if you have a background of trauma, you better believe that there's some replay going on in that mind. And for us to know that when that replay is happening, people are out of their prefrontal cortex where that brain is actually working and where things are being stored properly and you're able to process things. And now you're in this emotional mind that can't really discern what to do. So when you have training like Dr. Mashovsky gives, when she's brought into our cause network calls, when you have training like that, it helps you, number one, if you see someone behaving erratically or maybe going back to abusive situations, you might have more empathy for it because you might realize that this is a symptom of the brain being traumatized. And until the brain gets healed, the behavior is going to continue, right? So psychoeducation is huge. Other things are books. So this is a book about the state of human trafficking by Nita Bells, who was a member of our Foursquare family, and it's called In Our Backyard, and there's many books which I can share out with you. There's also a bunch of little videos that you could look at. Making of a Girl is a great one. Exodus Cry has a new movie out called Buying Her, which is all about sex buying. I will send you a good long list of different resources that you should check out. And also I wanted to share, and then maybe education that you can offer to a survivor that might be transformative in their life. And that might be like our IT Biz Tech Academy that Love Never Fails offers, which is nationwide, and we provide tech training for people so that they can reach economic sustainability. So they can become sales reps or customer service reps or engineers or entrepreneurs or data scientists or project managers. So there's six pathways that they could pursue. So those are just some of the ways, right? So education for yourself and for the people that you might offer at your church, okay? The next thing is outreach. How many of you actually do outreach? Awesome. Ooh, this is where all the doers are. Yes. How many times do you do it a week?
It varies because of my other things I do a week, but I work at an organization called Zoe International.
Okay, I know Zoe. Yeah. Who else? How many?
We do about 2 to 3 times a month.
A month. Perfect. And a journey for your church?
For church.
Thanks. Who else?
We do a every other month diaper drive for families. Four times a month do a homeless meal.
Nice. That's outreach. Excellent. Who else? Yeah.
I want a total of 50
every year that I'm going out, but I recently lost
the worship
and trafficking
events,
but
also I'm just
getting out of
the
environment,
so I'm here
on all
your
hands.
You're at
the Healing Force Church? Yes. My mom was a healing. Okay, so excellent. My mom will be like, "Oh my gosh, you didn't wear a bib. Now you're over here." you get the reputation of being the trafficking lady. It's not a good. It's not when you come to the parties, everyone's going, "Oh, there she is." But no, I try to keep it under wraps. Karen and I were talking about how we're on the plane and we're on planes and people are sitting next to us and they go, "So what do you do for a living?" We're like, "I have to work with women, kids," you know. We're trying not to like overwhelm someone on a plane, but they keep asking. And then you tell them, they go, either they're like, "Really? I'd love to learn more." Or they go, "Oh." So anyway, outreach. This was one of our outreach coordinators in Oakland, and you can see the bracelet that she has on her hand. And this is what we give out. It says "You are loved," and it has our phone number on the inside. And we hand that out, and then you see it's on her. And we just love on people and whoever that we're walking by and offer them some support and some prayer. So here's the geek out part. Is that okay? I'm going to geek out with you for a little bit. So I believe that you have to have a strategy before you just start digging in to doing outreach. I mean, obviously the Lord can just say, you know, go out, hit the streets. But I believe He will give you a strategy if you pray over it and you do your research. He will show you how to go about doing it. Now, how many of you know where the poverty is in your community? You know where it is? Okay. So how many of you do not know where it is? Not sure where the need is. Okay. So the first step that I want to invite you to do, and I'm going to show you, I did a little search just this morning. It only took me like 10 minutes. I did a little search on Anaheim so that you can kind of get a feel for how this works. And I'm going to give you all these links, but this is good as a reminder. Go ahead and take a picture so you can remind yourself. So I'm going to show you how SAPE, which is the poverty data tool that Census Bureau gives us, will show you where the poverty is in your community. That's a marginalized community, so you're going to guess that that's going to be where you're going to get some opportunity to go do serve, right? So then I'm going to show you what you do after that. So first step is you're going to go on to SAPE, and there you're going to look up the state of interest. See in the upper left-hand corner right here where it says state? You're going to select whatever your state is. Then you're going to select a school district. Skip the county part. Just go to school district, because this is going to tell you, unless you want to not deal with children, then I'll show you how to do it differently. But this is just to give you an example. I said, I want to look at where the impoverished children are, the 5 to 17-year-olds. So I clicked on State California School District. I chose Anaheim Union High School, which is 7 through 12. And here I see that there are 4,338 children living in poverty. So that's going to be my target market for whatever I, you know, whatever services I feel led to offer to them. Okay, so then I'm going to go a little bit further. I want to know a little bit more about them. So this is the Anaheim Union High School District.
So I'm going to dig into that. And if you click on that, it's going to show you a little map. You're going to click on it. And it's going to begin to tell you details about who you're serving there, who's there. This is really important. You don't want to come into a community that is, let's say, predominantly Nigerian, and you know nothing about the Nigerian culture, and you don't speak the language. You're not going to be relevant. You don't want to go into a predominantly Latino neighborhood and you don't speak Spanish. So you have to do the research beforehand to know who's there. Is this a native community? Is anybody with you? Because a lot of time, certain cultures do not, they're not going to be open to, you know, people that are not part of their culture. They might if you're with somebody who's part of their culture, but if you're just coming in from the outside, then that could be a problem. Also, your gender could play a big role. If you're going into predominantly Muslim community and you're all men and it's women there, they're not going to want to be by you. And, you know, or if they're Jewish, you're not even allowed to touch each other. So you have to understand what the cultural dynamic is of where you're going. And that's where these analytics are going to help you. Okay? So I look down, I'm looking at race, I'm looking at poverty, I'm looking at education levels, all of it. I'm looking to see, look at this, 11% of this community is without healthcare. That's a need that needs filling. So if you had people that were nurses and doctors, if you wanted to do a mobile health clinic, that could appeal to that 11% that doesn't have what they need. And it's there where you're going to be going, what does this have to do with human trafficking? Anybody having that problem? Everything. Because if I can promise you that I can take care of your toothache, that's my way in. I'm going to pay for you to go to the dentist. I'm going to get your teeth looking right. And then you're going to pay me back for that. That's the way this works. Quid pro quo. So next thing, you go into Neighborhood Scout, right? So this is a different tool. Again, I'm going to send it to you. And I always like to joke because I look for, everybody else likes the light purple, which is the best. I like the worst. the people have the least resources. So I looked over here at that neighborhood and I said, ooh, that's the one I want to know about. That's the one I want to be with. And so I began to look at that particular area, clicked on it, and I said, oh, my goodness, there's a junior high here, and there's a cemetery, which is kind of interesting because, as I mentioned in the last session, Karen does a lot of her ministry in Compassion First in an actual, they're actually in Indonesia, they live in the cemetery. So just being around that, there's a certain element, there's something going on there, living around in this area. Okay, this is one of the most impoverished areas. So I started looking at it, and I'm like, huh, do you know what the average price of a home is in this neighborhood? Guess. Guess. 20,000, average price of a home, okay? Anaheim, in this neighborhood, which is called the Turnberry neighborhood, what's the average price? Half a million, 500, 400. Somebody else said six? Two? $802,000. In the lowest poverty area, our highest poverty area, I chose the worst area, the average house was $802,000. Look at what it says when you double click. It says, it's equally important to understand the rate of people, particularly children, who are living at or below the federal poverty line. So there are people that are living in this neighborhood where it's very affluent, very poor. And it says that Turnberry neighborhood has more Mexican ancestry people living in it than nearly any neighborhood in America. So predominantly Mexican. So you're going to go into that neighborhood, you're going to need to have people with you that are Spanish speaking, that are culturally relevant, that understand how to minister to that population, and then know that there's people that are impoverished. Yes, question.
I'm just a bit confused. Yeah. How do you get stupid poor people living in high-value poverty locations?
Yeah.
Are they homeless?
No, there are probably about 10 or 15 people living in the same house.
Multi-generational.
So somebody has either their whole family living there working, and it's a lot of different houses like this, right? Or they may be renting it out to a lot of different people. That may be another scenario. And you see that there a lot in the Latino culture. So, and that has a lot of implications, actually, because you have different people living there that might not be the best mix or the most safe mix for people, you know, different lifestyles. And it's, you know, it's not anything to do with the culture per se, but it's to do with when we live all together to try and survive. Now I'm subjected to your ways of being, and, you know, if I'm a single mom and I don't have too much say-so, you know, I'm just trying to keep my room together. I might overlook some things that are crossing some boundaries. Is everybody tracking with me on this?
Yes.
Okay.
So those are the families, those are the households you want to target. That's your target audience for the love. All the love you got stored up for them. So then the second thing I did, so first I did my research about the area. Then I said, what's the city doing about this? So I pulled up the city website and I did a search for human trafficking. And what I found was the city was recommending, actually, let me just show you that real quick again. I found that the city was recommending Orange County Human Trafficking Task Force. So why reinvent the wheel? Maybe I go to the Human Trafficking Task Force and I learn more about what's being done already. And I learned from that. Now, I'm going to give you a big warning. As Christians, there is a huge movement happening in our world to decriminalize sex. Prostitution, huge. How many of you live in California? Do you guys know about SB 357? So, legalized order for the purpose of prostitution on January 1st. So what that means is that if you're seeing an increase in sex buying, it's because now, when police observe someone nude, you know, literally wearing stars and fishnet, you know, sweater on top and 20-inch heels, walking around, hanging out of cars, they cannot do anything in California. The only way they can intervene is if they hear the transaction. They have to be able to hear that they're negotiating the price. So now the only time arrests are happening is under a sting operation. So that has major implications to the kind of services that are being offered and the kinds of things that are being talked about in these task forces, because there's a huge sex work is work movement happening. And it's happening in New York, it's happening in Oregon, it's happening in California. And so I just want you to be aware. By the way, I'm a proponent, just letting you know, I'm a proponent of decriminalizing exploitation for the exploited, because I don't think they should be criminalized and put in chain, you know, handcuff. But I want them to get services, exit services. You don't just decriminalize and leave them out on the street. You say, hey, I'm not going to criminalize you, but check it out. I got a house for you. I got some food for you. I got some things. I got alternatives for you. So that's what I have been advocating for with all of our senators and legislators here in the state. So let me show you what they had. Ooh, it's not showing me. That's weird. Let me show you what they had on the page. That's interesting. Okay. Oh, that's weird. I wonder why I did that. Okay. It's all right. I was almost done with that anyway. Let me try this one more time. And there.
Did I mention it was in tape?
Okay, we'll just keep it there. So the task force had a whole white paper. So when you click on this
link here, you're going to see there's a white paper on what human trafficking is. More education. So there's education there, there's a relationship there. And then so you know where is the problem, right? That's your target. Where's that? You know what the city's doing about it. And then the third thing you want to know is, what are some nonprofits that are doing the work? So I'm going to give you the link. It's humantraffickinghotline.org. You go there, you put in the zip code, you put in the city, and you search go, and it will list all the nonprofits that are doing the work. Now, if you have a nonprofit and you're not listed, there's an application that you have to fill out to be listed there. It's 16 pages, just letting you know. But I did want to mention that some of these nonprofits that are listed here are proponents of sex work as work. So just buyer beware that not everybody who's listed here is vetted, ready to go, let's partner with them. No, you got to do your own research again. Asking, maybe you create your own interview so you know what's important to you. Okay, so questions about this before I move on. Is this helpful?
Yes.
You getting your wheels turning, hopefully?
Yes.
Okay. Question?
Just because we live in a pretty rural area.
Yeah.
I know there's stuff going on, but I'm just, because I've been on our city's website before, I just don't know how much information I'm going to get online. Would you recommend it, like, go to the city and ask them, you know, what are they doing? I mean, is there...
Sure.
I mean, we're looking at probably, like, there's maybe 10,000 people in our, you know, mm-hmm. two-city-wide community. So I'm sure that they have some sort of task force or something.
So before you leave, we'll just do a quick look.
Okay.
We'll look on the city website, and then we'll look on here, and we'll see if there's any nonprofits that pop up. And you should just get used to doing that wherever you're at. Just say, you know, rather than reinventing the wheel, go look, and then you can do some legwork to see, you know, what you think about them, what their practices look like. Are they trauma-informed, you know, and so on. And I'm happy to, you know, support you in doing this. We also, as Karen mentioned, she's got kind of eyes on international organizations, and so if you want to vet, you know, an international organization, that's another resource that you can utilize. And then coming to our, and I'll just share that, coming to our Foursquare causes, coming to our Foursquare causes group network, and I'll put that up so you can lock that in, is another way that you can kind of get networked with other agencies. And so that's the actual Zoom, and this is the format of our time together. It's 1 hour. It's the fourth Tuesday of every month, 4 to 5 Pacific time. 15 minutes on an agency spotlight, 15 on educational nugget, best practice 15, and then we play together. And we really try to respect your time. So please join us. We have quite the range of people that are in the group. And it's a great way for us to learn from each other. So, but yeah, let's dig into that and see what the city's already doing. And then, you know, then there's the next step, which is maybe they're not doing anything. And then you can begin to say, is there an appetite to do anything? Like, does anybody in public health feel strongly about this? Does anybody, like if you have a county public health department, do they feel strongly about this? Is there a gender-based violence? That's what they're calling it now, so you gotta know that terminology. Is there a gender-based violence strategy for your county or your city? These are places where you might be able to find funding if you're a nonprofit that's looking to, you know, do things, or maybe you're a church that wants to sign up and do things. But I think the biggest thing is, think about that 4,300 children living in poverty. I want to emphasize this to you all. Some people get really like pressured themselves, say, I should be under bridges. I should be snatching people out of hotel rooms and off the street corners to stop human trafficking. Well, hold on. We're just going to do what God says to. If God told you to be a mentor to somebody, if he told you to help somebody start a job, if he told you to bring food to a specific family every week, that's what he's called you to do, that, to do what is good, to do what is right. to walk humbly. That there's a humility in that, because you know it's not about you, it's about what he, it's not the best gift you could give, it's what he told you to give at the right time. And I mention that because I had this realization that, you know, third graders in the U.S., we have this data that says if third graders do not know how to read, that's a pathway to prison and it's a pathway to trafficking. So if you're teaching kids to read, so that they're ready at third grade, guess what you're preventing? So own that, receive that, enjoy that, and don't put so much pressure on yourself to be all these things that, you know, maybe you haven't been called to be. Any other questions? No? No questions? Okay. I wanted to share a few more things with you. So we are part of the Causes Network, as I mentioned, and there are many other causes that you could get involved in. And so you could get involved in campus ministry, maybe like working with young people that are in college, prison restoration, disability network, foster care, refugee. You guys probably saw Jawanza talking about the Unseen Collective. So whatever it is, I urge you, get involved in those. And here's the deal. And that's why I said, you know, I use Romans 8:28, because this is all working together. It's all working together to achieve God's perfect plan, his outcome. When you get involved with prison restoration, you're stopping someone from maybe being an exploiter or being trafficked. When you get involved with foster care advocacy, which is where we see a lot of vulnerable children, you are stopping someone from being trapped. So it's all interconnected.